What's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets presented by So Rare right here live on our FTN Network YouTube page, also on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany hanging out with you. Hopefully everybody had a fantastic Monday, having a good start to their Tuesday. A lot to get to here on the show. If you're unfamiliar with So Rare, check out SoRare.com. We have a link inside the description of this video. We are going to start talking So Rare as we are just 2 days away from opening day in Major League Baseball. It's a fun fantasy game where you can collect cards, trade, buy, sell with tons of managers and compete against them for cash. It's going to be super fun. We're going to have a lot of fun on this show in the coming days. We're going to talk some MLB futures here today. We're going to take a look at the NL and AL MVP odds in both leagues. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at Cy Young's. I'm going to present my division winners, my World Series winner, ALCS, NLCS, final matchups, all those good stuff. All that good stuff, we'll talk about it here on this show. All kinds of futures. We have been talking quite a bit of baseball over the past little bit. We hammered home win totals. We've had some division previews. We've talked a lot of fantasy baseball. If you have a draft tonight, tomorrow, maybe you're late drafting at the end of the week, there's still some high stakes drafts happening over at NFBC. On Friday, we had pitching targets, and yesterday we had hitting targets. We basically had 21 undervalued. I think it was 21 undervalued hitters. So if you're looking for a little bit of fantasy baseball content, we have you covered here for free on our FTN Network YouTube page. You're watching on Game Plus Network. You can hop on over to our FTN Network YouTube page and check out those videos. We have a bunch of playlists, and I have it in the Mean Street section, also in the fantasy baseball and betting section as well. We are going to talk a little NFL here off the top. I actually have odds for Lamar Jackson's next team. He requested a trade yesterday, but really he requested a trade on March 2nd. He just made it known on social media on his Twitter account that he had requested a trade from the Baltimore Ravens right around the time that Harbaugh was talking about Lamar Jackson. It wasn't a press conference, but he was getting interviewed, and the reporter asked if he had saw the tweet, and he didn't see the tweet. And you could see in his face, it's like, started to, you know, get a little red. Oh no, what did he tweet? What's happening here? And he talked about how he loves Lamar Jackson. He wants to be with Lamar Jackson, wants him to be part of the squad. But it's easy for the head coach to say that. You got to get it done and sign the guy, but we'll see where he ends up. Actually going to talk about his odds in just a minute. As I mentioned, Mike Randall's in the house. Dude is the GOAT. Are you kidding? Brendan Gildon's in the house. Wow. It's been a long time, Mr. Gildon. Hopefully everything is well. Got the popcorn ready. Feet up. We're going to talk some college basketball as we are down to four teams, the final four. And if you've been watching, as I said on the show, you've had to have some success. FAU, I've already wrapped up my bracket because of Randall. FAU in the final four. And I know UConn was a hot team here on the show as well from our guy Walter Waddell, but I don't think there's anybody hotter in the sports world when it comes to betting than Mike Randall at the moment. I believe he has won like 10 of his last 12. He's hanging by. We're going to talk about the Owls. Gildon, everything is fantastic. Looking forward to the show. Appreciate you. Daily Handle in the house. Good afternoon means let's go. Let's get after it. So we'll break down those two matchups in the four squads remaining. We got overall odds to take a look at as well. UConn, the favorite. To me, they've been the most impressive team. I mean, they really have. They can do a lot. I mean, beat you down low with the perimeter. They got scoring. They got a nice wing player who's, I think, just a great distributor. They got good guard play. I really like what I've seen from them in the tournament. They've been extremely impressive, but how could we not ride with the Owls? Are you kidding me? It's Owl land. It is the season for Owls. And no question about it. Here's the odds for Lamar Jackson. So this from DraftKings. If not Baltimore, for which NFL team will Lamar Jackson take his next regular season snap, brackets 2023? The favorite? The Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are interesting at plus 250. Now, the Colts, it's been, what, 6 years since Andrew Luck has retired? They've had six different quarterbacks. They haven't had a top pick over the time. Randall just did an Indianapolis Colts preview live on our FTN Network YouTube page. Some talk about Gardner Minshew rolling him out as the starter. I think that they draft a guy, but they have traded some first-round picks over the past couple of years, right? I mean, they traded one for Carson Wentz. It was a second. He played X amount of snaps. It became a first. He played those snaps. They lost a first. They traded, I think, a 13th overall pick in 2020 for Forrest Buckner. Now, it was a good trade, but they have a history of trading first-round picks. They just traded one, I think, last year as well, like a 22nd or 26th to Washington. So they do have a history of flipping some of these first-round picks. Go and get a quarterback. They've tried to replace Andrew Luck with veteran presence like Jacoby Brissett, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz, just clearly not working out for them. Are they going to get C.J. Stroud? They're going to probably miss out on the two top dogs and C.J. Stroud, maybe one overall, or Bryce Young. Do they get Anthony Richardson? Is he even ready to be the week one starter? I don't think so. I think he's fairly raw. So I get Colts being favored here at plus 250 if they trade some picks. If they trade that fourth overall, that'd be a good, you know, a win for Baltimore, I do believe. Atlanta is second at 3-1. We talked about them being in the top five in terms of fantasy-friendly environments. I would love that spot. I wouldn't necessarily love it as much for the Colts from a fantasy standpoint. I mean, Lamar can tuck and run. He just have better options in the passing game. Alec Pierce is a nice young wide receiver. And also, of course, Michael Pittman's a stud. And they got young tight ends who are really intriguing as well. But the Falcons, with Kyle Pitts and with Drake London, that'd be a really good fantasy scenario. They're 3-1. The Patriots are plus 450, and there's already talk that they're not interested, and I don't feel like New England's going to go that way. That's a sucker bet. Washington at 6-1. Washington's another one. I misspoke yesterday when I said 18 different quarterbacks. Actually, 14 different quarterbacks since Kirk Cousins has left, and with Jacoby Brissett, if he tosses a ball for them, it will be 15 different starting quarterbacks since Kirk Cousins left, like, in 2017. That's ridiculous. Like, I would like to see Washington be aggressive. Sam Howell's not the answer, and they have some nice weapons in the offense as well. I mean, they got a nice 1-2 punch on the ground with Robinson and Antonio Gibson, but I love Jahan Dotson, and Terry McLaurin's a player as well. Miami would be the best fantasy environment, in my opinion, at plus 850. Tua's had some injuries. We talked about this yesterday, but Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, a lot of speed. The Detroit Lions at 9-1. I think that I could see them getting a guy like Anthony Richardson and playing behind Goff for one more year. Goff had a really good season, particularly inside the dome. He was fantastic. The Lions are 9-1, but Jameson Williams, you could take the top off of defense for sure. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown is really nice. The Vikings at 10-1, the Titans at 14-1. The Titans, sure, but it wouldn't be a great fantasy environment for them. And I just don't feel like they'll be really aggressive in getting him. The Jets already said they're out, but 25-1. I'd rather, like, again, yesterday I said this, if I was a Jets fan, just give me 26-year-old former MVP Lamar Jackson instead of 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers coming off a brutal season. And I don't think the Jets, even with Rodgers, are a Super Bowl contending team. I think the AFC is loaded. I think the window for them to win would be much larger if they got a guy like Lamar Jackson. Maybe it's a similar price to get Lamar as well. The Niners at 15-1. Do they trade Trey Lance? Lynch came out yesterday and said Purdy's going to be the guy. I don't know if he's ready to be the guy week one, but interesting comments. I understand Purdy's probably give him the benefit of the doubt for what he did yesterday or this year. And Trey Lance really not showing us much since he was drafted when they were very aggressive to get Trey Lance. Is that a trade option? Trey Lance in a first and you give us Lamar? I don't know. The Bucs at 35-1 and the Seahawks at 41. We're just getting crazy now, but the Colts favored. I say he gets traded to Miami. I think Miami, they've traded a lot of capital over the past couple of years. They don't even have a first round pick this year, but they traded a lot for Tyreek Hill. They traded some capital for Jalen Waddle. Why not just go all in and get a quarterback? That would really shake up the NFL world. We'll see what Randall thinks here next. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring in the GOAT. We're going to talk some college basketball, preview those two matchups, and see who he's thinking where Lamar Jackson could potentially end up. We'll be back in a couple. Hang tight. Mean Streets continues here on Game Plus Network. Welcome back in. Yes. Rocking out of the commercial break. Owl on your shoulder. Absolutely love it. Mike Randall in the house at Randall Rant. My goodness, dude. I'm so impressed. I've been following your work for years, and you and I have chopped it up before. You were officially a member of FTN for years. We've taken part in lots of drafts. I've followed your work, college basketball. And I remember Joe Pizzapia telling me when we brought you on, man, you got a good one. I said, you don't have to tell me that. The guy is super sharp and knows a thing or two about a lot of sports. And I just want to congratulate you off the top, man. You are having a heck of a tournament, man. You are what? What'd you rattle off? Like 10 wins in your last 12 here?
Yeah, perfect Elite Eight, 10 at 12. Chris, I'm actually getting acclimated to my family again. I mean, I've spent I just watched so many games and crunched the numbers and look at the metrics. And it's nice that it all came together. I loved Florida Atlantic. I loved everything about them. Good. I remember I saw them in November. And I was saying, who is this? They're playing Florida. And I'm like, what is, you know, and it seems like Loyola Chicago, when they make their run, they beat Florida at Florida early in the year. So like, granted, no major team is going to play these small schools in their, you know, in the early part of the season, unless it's at home, and usually it ends up being Florida. But I remember seeing them go, let me watch this team. Every time I watched them, I liked them more and more. Defensively, stop the three, shoot the three, depth, veteran team, big man inside who doesn't foul, go to the books with it. It's been awesome, and they're on a run. It's been amazing. Yeah, it's been a good run.
Are they ever on a run? Three losses all year, too, and not a lot of people talked about them, of course, and you came on this show and said, you know, it's a team that you've liked all year, and you're going to stay true, and it's amazing because I think their biggest test was that first-round matchup against Memphis, which is a one-point matchup with some controversy, too, with some roughing. Yeah, I thanked you earlier. I messaged you yesterday. One of my brackets already finished because I got FAU. The other way, I went with Memphis. So I felt like one of those two teams, whoever got by, I think could have went on a run. I think we could have maybe even said the same thing here today talking about Memphis, but it was FAU who got it done. You got all the Owls. I was telling a story in the green room to Quan, and he's like, you probably shouldn't say that on air, but when we moved to the East Coast from Toronto, we got a house in the country, and we were out late one night, and we could hear three different Owls. And we hear them now almost every evening when we go out, especially in the summertime. They're all talking to each other. You know, my partner loves owls. She got all kinds of little owl things over in the garden on tree stumps. So we are big owl fans here before FAU came into my life. And now it's just owl city all the time. I'm sending owl emojis to everybody, to you included. You're coming in hot fire with an owl as well. Before we get into the game, let's bring the overall NCAA tournament odds here to win the championship. Quan, if you have it, UConn is favored, of course. And I said off the top of the show that UConn has been, in my opinion, the most impressive team in the tournament. Do you agree? They've had no issue beating up their opponents.
Oh, they have. And they've won every game by at least 15 points. I do have some issues with UConn, but right now, statistically, they are number one in KenPom. They have the most balancing. They're third in adjusted offensive efficiency and 11th in defense. They block a ton of shots. They rebound well. Sonogo inside, second best offensive rebounding team in the country next to Houston. So on paper, absolutely. And they've been scalding hot, and they have been pounding teams all their way here to the Final Four. They have to be the favorite. There's no discussion.
Yeah, they are minus 125 over at DraftKings. San Diego State is plus 380. And then we have Miami at plus 475 and Florida Atlantic at plus 650. Blast from the past here. Gildan in the house is a big college basketball fan who's been hanging out with us for a couple of years. Miami has the best guard play remaining. UConn has no cakewalk to the title. You would agree with that? We'll get into that game in the next block, but I see you agreeing with that.
Oh, 100%. I think Brandon's right on. We'll talk about it. But you have to realize, we've seen, Chris, teams come in scalding hot. I mean, I'm old enough to remember UNLV. They pounded Duke back in 1990 by 30 points, 103-73. They come back and meet again the next year in the Final Four. They're a 10-point favorite. Duke ends up beating them. So you have to look at each separate pod as a separate entity and handicap it based on the matchups. But certainly coming in right now, UConn, without a doubt, minus 125.
All right, let's talk about the Owls. FAU plus 115, San Diego State University minus 130. We have a total here of 135, and SDSU 2-point favorites here. How could we not ride this out with FAU? I know that you probably have a soft spot for them, but we're not just picking them for the sake of picking them. You actually feel like they have a pretty good chance here of getting to the finals.
Yeah, Chris, I was told I had a soft spot with them when they played Memphis in the first round. But I told you that was going to be the toughest game because Kendrick Davis was on fire, and he's the type of player who can carry a team. Then I was told I had a soft spot against Tennessee because Florida Atlantic had never seen a type of defense like that. Okay, came back and took care of them in MSG. Then I heard there was no chance against Kansas State because Marquise Noel is Mr. New York City. Mr. New York City went crazy, and they still won the game. The problem that no one wants to recognize with FAU, they have great guards. They shoot the three really well. They guard the three really well, and they rebound. So, Chris, they've played a team like San Diego State in Tennessee. You can't tell me San Diego State is better than Tennessee. You can't. Tennessee beat Alabama. Yes, San Diego State has been fantastic. Yes, they have played exceptionally well. And yes, they D'd up as well in their matchup against Alabama. But you've seen this FAU team do this before. They're not going to be overwhelmed. They out-rebounded Alabama. And the key for me in this matchup, Chris, is San Diego State can have trouble scoring. And their number one scorer is Matt Bradley, the Cal transfer who they rely has taken more than 100 more field goal attempts than everyone else. He's been catastrophic the last two games. Terrible. He's been benched. So what San Diego State has relied on are role players like Lamont Butler, who averaged 8 points a game, putting up 20. You know, bright lights, Houston, that gets a little tougher here. So they're going to need something from Matt Bradley, and I don't think they're going to get it. So are those role players like Kansas State, when I saw Ish Mazoud live at MSG hitting shots from the logo when he had 5 threes, whatever he had, and he averaged 5 points a game, didn't happen the next game. So I don't think San Diego State's going to do it with those role players. Matt Bradley going to step up? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed with their defense, but I like, where's the offense going to come from, right? That's that's the one thing. Out of all these games that you've seen live at MSG, is there a player or two that's, doesn't have to be from this matchup, that has really just blown you away?
Yeah, I, you know, I'm impressed with John L. Davis of the Owls. He is really careful with the ball. He's a great leader. He doesn't force shots. He can bang threes. And the other guy on Florida Atlantic that I saw in person who I thought had to play well was Vladislav Golden, the big guy inside, the big man. He doesn't foul. He's much like Kalkbrenner, but not as good on Creighton. And he dominated Kansas State. So he is a guy who can get a double-double, who needs to stay out of foul trouble. Those are the type of players. I mean, that pod was crazy. You had role players on Kansas State, role players on Florida Atlantic.
Yeah,
that's what I saw. Is I think what they need is more realistic than what San Diego State needs.
What a difference a year makes, right? This time last year, like UNC and Kansas and Nova, all those blue blood schools in the Final Four. And then we have several teams here in the Final Four for the first time. No one seeds at all made it past the Elite Eight. It's just, it's fantastic. And I'm here for it. I know we talked about in the last episode last week that the parity across the league and maybe trends that are going to continue. We're going to break and talk Miami and UConn in the next block. But, you know, since I brought up Lamar, and I meant to do it off the top, Lamar Jackson, Is there something you want to share from the Colts that you talked about and maybe a realistic / fun environment? Like, where do you think Lamar ends up?
Yeah, could we were
talking in Indy.
It's interesting. We were all talking in the Slack. Jeff Ratcliffe, of course, was saying he's thinking Indy's a strong possibility. What I found interesting in talking to George Bremer, the beat reporter who I interviewed who covers the Colts, he is not positive that they're taking a quarterback at 4. And listen, there's something crazy that always happens. He's like, maybe they don't feel that the quarterback that drops to them at 4 is going to be worth that pick. So do they wait until the second round? And he goes, either way, whoever they take, he doesn't think they're going to be ready week 1. So what I got out of it, Chris, is if they don't get Lamar Jackson, it could be Gardner Minshew in week 1. It's possible. In fact, I'd say it's even likely, he was saying, if they don't get Lamar Jackson.
I could see it, the way the Colts have just kind of patchworked the quarterback position over the past couple of years with veteran presence, but they're definitely going to need to take care of it. I mean, Andrew Luck obviously put them in a tough spot, but I could see them trading for Lamar. I really could. And as I said off the top, DraftKings has them favored to get Lamar Jackson. So we'll see what happens there. We're going to take a quick break. Randall's going to hang by, and we are going to talk UConn and Miami. We do have UConn as massive favorites in this game, but we're going to talk about maybe a potential upset here next on Mean Streets, presented by So Rare. Back in a couple. Hang tight. Chris Meehan, Mike Randall here with you. Mean Streets continue on Game Plus Network, live on our FTN Network YouTube page. Hanging out with us, smash the like button. If you have any comments, any questions, you can leave them there. If you're watching the replay, at Randall Rant, if you have any questions for him when it comes to college basketball, dude's been red, red hot. Where would you like to see Lamar go? Where would the funnest fantasy environment be for Lamar Jackson, though?
It's not Indy. As much as it's been absolutely riveting seeing the Falcons go back-to-back tight end and wide receivers in the early first round, okay? I think him in Atlanta would be fun. I think that's what they need. They are starved offensively. I believe the coaching staff is solid. I'm not sure he's got to be in an offense where everything is centered around him and he can do what he needs to be great. Bremer did bring up in the interview to me, though, that obviously having someone like him, Michael Pittman, great on the jump balls in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. So to have him scramble and create those open plays, and Isaiah McKenzie now, et cetera. So there are possibilities. I think the Colts would be great. I also like Atlanta because I want to see them, you know, sort of supercharged here in a division that's kind of wide open now with Brady stepping aside.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely wide open with the Saints favored to win that division. Okay, so UConn 5.5-point favorites here against Miami, Florida, and using our prop shop to get the best possible odds, parlay calculator, I'm seeing minus 240 if you want to back UConn, plus 197 here if you want to back Miami, and a high total at 149. Again, I talked off the top, like Andre Jackson, like 8, 9, and 10 in his last game, 10 dimes, at least 7 assists in the 4 games. Very impressed with the wing player, and Jordan Hawkins is a guy that really impresses me as well. 20 points against Zaga. Man, they blew out Zaga. Beat him by like 30 at 24 against Arkansas as well. Those are two players that have really caught my eye, Randall. Just really feel like they've been really, really strong here throughout the tournament. But as discussed here throughout the chat, Miami has the best guard play remaining. So not a cakewalk here. You see potential upset? Can you get behind maybe just Miami covering? What do you think?
Yeah, spoiler alert for the College Baseball Betting Show on Saturday. More than likely, I'm going with Miami to cover in this game. First of all, I love to fade the momentum. So right now, UConn is absolutely scalding hot. Everyone's on them. I cannot even come up with a logic why I would bet UConn in this matchup at minus 240. I can't. I just can't get there. Sure, I understand Connecticut's been great and they've been dominant. But let's get a little deeper, Chris, on exactly what dominant means. Okay. UConn plays Iona, super impressive. UConn plays St. Mary's. That game's a one-point game. Alice Dukas goes out the three-point shooter. Everything falls apart. They win by 15 over a St. Mary's team without Alec Dukas, who wouldn't even sniff the tournament if that was the case all year. Then they play Arkansas, who was finger in the dam. They did not have their players. They were tired. Nick Smith had not played well. Then they play Gonzaga. Gonzaga's backcourt is horrific. How horrific, Chris? Their starting point guard, Nolan Hickman, had 0 points in the last two games. 0 points. So my point is this. UConn is great. They're fantastic. But if you were going to pick a foil for a team that was scalding hot, any team that's entered the Final Four scalding hot, going back to the UNLV days, Larry Johnson, Stacey Augman, you would want great guard play, which Miami has. You would want a big man who's effective. Norchad Omier has averaged almost 4 offensive rebounds per game every game in his 3-year career in college. And you would want a legendary coach on the sideline. Check, 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 check. Miami is going to put pressure on them. Miami has now played Houston. Miami has battled against really tough teams. They were dead to rights against Texas. Texas was bombing threes, was scalding hot. They came all the way back. They were down 13 points with 14 minutes left. They passed the ball. Wilga Poplar passes the ball off the back there. Timmy Allen gets the dunk, and everything went downhill from there. I am on Miami in this game. I am taking the 5.5. I think the momentum with UConn is too much. This is still a UConn team that lost to Marquette twice. This is still a UConn team that we have seen scalding hot like they were in the first half against Providence in the Big East tournament, blowing the doors off, and they almost gagged the whole lead back. Why? Their backcourt is sketchy. If you can limit Jordan Hawkins, which if anyone can, Miami can, they're going to keep this game close. And if they're going to keep this game close, a coaching advantage, Miami. Senior advantage, Miami. Guard advantage, Miami. I'm taking the Hurricanes in 5.5.
I love it. You got me fired up. You always fire me up. But man, what a comeback. I didn't see really that comeback happening in the last game. I just didn't see it, right? There's like a momentum was rolling for Texas. I was like, man, I just don't see that this is going to happen. But I don't want to take too much away from your Saturday show, but can we bring this up just one more time? Actually, Sam Pollock's in the house, just thinking of all the open threes that UConn is going to get in the game, which, yeah. For sure. But something that we've also talked about on this show is like these large spreads. Mm-hmm. We've seen, Bama had the 10-point, Princeton with 10-point dogs. We've seen so many large spreads. And I have a hard time at this point of the season and in throughout the tournament to even 5.5. It just seems like it's too much. Too many points for, you know, a game of this magnitude. Again, I don't want to take away too much from your show on Saturday. I know everybody's going to tune in live, but how could we not have a little sprinkle on plus 650? And if you had the sprinkle a couple weeks ago, I mean, I think we brought it up maybe week and a half ago. They were like 30-1 at one point, but plus 650? Yes, Randall?
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. I put it this way. The team that would surprise me the most that wins the title is San Diego State. Because I think they have a very tough matchup with Florida Atlantic, and I would not pick them against either team. Florida Atlantic has the Villanova 85 mojo. They have it. They're on the ride. They have a team. They have, they can shoot the three. You saw they have Jalen Gaffney, who is a UConn player who is now with Florida Atlantic. They have a ton of options here. They make their free throws. So to me, with the worst odds, I'll take Florida Atlantic. I am not picking. I do not think San Diego State is cutting the nets down here on Monday night. So that one is out, and they don't even have the worst odds. That's my point.
What do you think about this comment from Sam?
Sam is right, but this is what I would say to Sam. Texas was 9 of 17 from three-point range. I mean, I don't think UConn can possibly shoot better than that, and then Miami locked them down. I don't think that UConn has the depth from three that Texas does with Carr, with Serge Ibari Rice, who was 3 of 6. Carr was 3 of 8. Tyrese Hunter can make them. He was only 1 of 6. They were 1 of 8 at the end of the game. Nor Chad Omir got in foul trouble. So Sam's right. If Omir gets in foul trouble again and they end up scalding hot from three, it's a problem. But you know what? How about the fact, Sam, that Miami shot 36, almost 37% from three this year, and they only went 2 of 8 against Texas. So give me a little bit of Miami positive regression from three also, and I think we're right there. I do not think UConn is blowing them out. I don't.
What do you think about this comment from Reese? Would you hedge Miami future with UConn championship?
I'm not betting UConn for the title. I'm not. I'd rather come up with it. I don't like the odds right now, and I think that they're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I think people are just going with the fact that UConn is scalding hot. Andre Jackson is great. UConn could turn the ball over a lot, Chris. They've had trouble with turnovers. That you just haven't seen it recently. I think the Gonzaga, that Gonzaga spread was horrific. The idea that Gonzaga was only 2.5-point underdog is crazy. This Miami team is good. It's really good. And I think they're going to keep it close. And they're on a mission. And they're solid in every possible phase. You want to see their defense is weak? Their defense was great for the last 14 minutes against Texas. And I don't think UConn's any more explosive than the way Texas has been playing. So I'm not taking UConn. I just don't like the odds. I don't like the value because I think they're vulnerable. If I thought they were overwhelmingly dominant, yes, I would.
Right.
But I think they could lose to either Miami or Florida Atlantic. I do.
Love it. Gildan says Texas shot 40% from three, 50% from the field, and only allowed 2 made threes, yes, and still lost. Yes. Right.
Yes. Well, that's the point. And I was sitting there on the Discord saying, boy, we're in trouble here. 14 minutes left. But you have to do with Texas is stop the threes. And I think Larrañaga is smart enough that he's going to limit the threes from UConn. If you do that and look at the games they've lost, they have found a chance to win. You got to limit Jordan Hawkins. But if you do, Tristan Newton's not taking over with his 37% from the field.
Right. Yeah. No, good point. Good stuff, Randall. Appreciate the ride, man. It's been fun. Check out Mike on Twitter at Randall Rant. Of course, you're already familiar with the College Basketball Betting Show. Check him out. Again, he's just been absolutely hot fire. I've never seen a run like this. College basketball, it's not easy, dude. Like, you're betting on kids, right? Like, it's tough, but you've been riding those owls, and I hope that they're cutting down the nets for you, dude, and be super, super pumped to see that happen as well. Appreciate you, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll chop it up again very, very soon. I got more to talk about here. Bring back Mike on Thursday. We just broke down the games, dude. We just broke them down.
Jordan, all Florida final. Let's get an all Florida final on Monday. How about that?
That'd be fantastic. Maybe we'll get him back on next week, of course, if he's willing. We'll certainly love to have him on the show. We'll bring that owl on as well. Okay, we'll talk soon, Mike. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. We're going to take a look at AL and NL MVP odds, some future odds for you guys, and also 10 games on the ice tonight in the NHL, so several props coming your way here on Mean Streets, presented by So Rare. Hang tight. Back in a couple. Welcome back in Mean Streets here live on our FTN Network YouTube page, right here on Game Plus Network as well, presented by So Rare. And the commercials just fire me up. If you're watching live with So Rare, I can't wait to play. More on that a little bit later on in the week, as we're just 2 days away from opening day in Major League Baseball. It is here. Brandon Gild in the house says, happy T-Mobile Tuesday. Free MLB TV package for T-Mobile users today to watch a little baseball. We love having you back, man. These vibes have been missed. We do appreciate you and all the support you've given us on this show over the past couple of years, so it's nice to have you back here on a Tuesday. We're gonna take a look at the AL MVP odds tomorrow. I'm gonna have all division winners, I'm going to have like the NLCS, ALCS winner, World Series winner. DraftKings has a lot of like player versus player props that I think that there's certainly some advantages, some edges that we can find. So I'm going to have a several amount of futures for you guys tomorrow. We did MLB win totals again. We got a bunch of content. If you missed any previous episodes on our FTN Network YouTube page, running through division odds and previews and teams, fantasy advice, and also some win totals that we attacked earlier. I think maybe my favorite is the Seattle Mariners at 87.5. I think that they're a 90 win team again. Love the rotation. I think it may be one of the best rotations in all of baseball. And I really like the Padres to win the division in the NL West, not the Dodgers. I like the Padres there, like the under on the Dodgers, but all of that stuff tomorrow. So AL MVP odds, Quan, if we could bring this up from DraftKings, you'll see up at the top, just like every year, Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, yet these guys can't find a way to bring the Halos to the postseason. Oh, I really hope that this is the year. I certainly do, for sure. I know it's a team sport. It just goes to show how much of a team sport it is. Trout got that taste of, you know, a great atmosphere, and I heard the quote, him talking to Nevin and saying how much he needed that and, you know, the spark to potentially get these guys to the playoffs. But Ohtani, it's a sucker bet at plus 190. You know, if he didn't win it last year, if he should have won it last year, I understand Judge and, you know, George with the jinx on Judge here. way to go, George. I know you're a Red Sox fan, but you're going to do Judge dirty like that. You know, I thought Shohei should have won the award last year, despite Judge, you know, setting the AL record for home runs. It's just, do they have an award? This is my thing with Shohei. When we called it on this show at 50-1 a couple years ago, win the MVP, I just thought, is he going to be MVP every year now moving forward? Is that what's going to happen? Because he set the precedent. How is he not the most valuable player? How is he not? Right? He's got a higher war than Gerrit Cole, who has led in war, and then a higher than Mike Trout, who's led in war. Like, it's as a hitter and as a pitcher, he does absolutely everything for you. It should really, he should have an award for himself, and then everybody else should battle for the MVP. It's like Connor McDavid. McDavid should have an award himself, and then everybody else should battle. But I do believe Ohtani and Trout are both sucker bets. Ohtani, I think, really could get traded. I know that the Angels are in a tough spot. Do they want to trade this guy? No, they want to keep him. But this organization is just, they've made the playoffs once in Trout's tenure in 2014. So if they're not near a playoff spot come trade deadline, what do you do? Do you just risk losing him? You could get 4-6 prospects for Shohei. It's interesting what's going to happen with the Halos. I don't really know. My gut tells me that this team will be out of a playoff spot come the trade deadline, and that they will move on from him, and it will be tough. It'll be a tough pill to swallow, but I think it will probably be the right call, because if Shohei wants to win, and if this is another season in LA where he can't sniff the playoffs, he's going to move on. I still think he's going to stay on the West Coast. I think the Padres are going to be in on him. Don't be surprised if the Giants are in on him. I know everybody's going to be talking about the Dodgers, but if he is shipped and traded away, he's not going to win the MVP. And if he is traded away, Mike Trout won't win the MVP, because the Halos probably are having a rough season. And if they do make the playoffs and they keep Shohei, Mike Trout's not going to win it over Shohei. So I think those first three bets, Ohtani at plus 190, Trout at plus 450, and Judge at 5-1, I don't like any of those bets. I think Julio Rodriguez is close. I think he's knocking on the door. I could see it. I'm intrigued with him. He's my number two overall player in fantasy baseball. I think he could make a case for 5 or 6 guys for sure, something we've talked a lot about on this show. 7-1, I think it's an all right bet. My favorite, Jordan Alvarez is 11-1. My favorite here is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at 12-1. I think it's time. He almost won it a couple years ago. He was neck and neck with Trout, close to the AL crown. I really like this Jays squad this year. I love the rotation. I like that they got some lefty bats inside that lineup with Varsho and Brandon Bell. I think Vlad Guerrero Jr. is going to have a good average. I think he's going to flirt with 40 home runs. He's in a really good lineup, a good ballpark. I really like that play at 12-1. Jose Ramirez is an interesting play as well. I like Cleveland to win the division. You know, they don't have a ton of studs on the squad. They got some nice players in their lineup. They got a good pitching staff and they got a good bullpen. But Jose Ramirez at 15-1, I think, is a decent shot as well. But I would go Vlad Guerrero Jr. at 12-1, followed by Julio Rodriguez at 7-1, and then Jose Ramirez at 15. Later on down the board, you see Rafael Devers at 20-1, Corey Seager at 20-1, Wander Franco at 25, Kyle Tucker at 25. The Astros are just so loaded. I know there's a lot of players that you can make a case for. Adley Rutschman's a nice player at 25-1. I think Baltimore is continuing to improve. A good season last year. They're one of the better teams in the second half of the season last year, and they got some kids that we will see this year. I just don't know if I'm there yet at 25-1. If you told me Byron Buxton was going to play 130 games, I'd sprinkle something down at 30-1. He's terrific when he's on the field and he's healthy. He's fantastic. Unfortunately, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. Bo Bichette's at 35-1. Carlos Correa also at 35-1. Marcus Semien at 40-1. Here's my long shot, Luis Robert Jr. at 40-1. We've yet to see it over a full season, but he certainly has all the tools. He doesn't really have the 40 home run power. You know, I think he could get to 25 and 30. Would that be enough to win the MVP? He's still fairly young. I still think that there's a ceiling that hasn't been tapped yet. He could get up there. At 40-1, I think it's a pretty good long shot. And then I'll throw Jeremy Peña here at 50-1 as well. I just think he's terrific, right? As a rookie, he was fantastic. You know, 20 homers, double-digit stolen bases. He's going to lead off here for the Astros, I do believe, while Jose Altuve is out for the first couple months of the season. The Astros do have some guys that are a little bit older in their lineup, right? Michael Brantley, how healthy is he going to be near the top of the order all year long? Jordan Alvarez is dealing with a couple things. But Peña, I mean, he's got the pedigree, right? He's already won the ALCS MVP. He's already won the World Series MVP. He's a good fielder. He's going to steal some bags. And I just think the average may not be there, but I think he's a guy that's a decent candidate. So to wrap it up here in the AL, I do believe Shohei and Trout are sucker bets. I'm not going to go to Judge. I like Vlad at 12-1, followed by Julio at 7-1, Jose Ramirez at 15-1, then Robert Jr. at 40-1, followed by Jeremy Peña. I just do a full unit on Vlad. It's tough to do these futures because you're not going to see your money for quite some time. But Vlad and Julio and Ramirez, followed by maybe half a unit on Luis Robert, maybe 0.25 on Peña at 50-1. We're going to break. We're going to talk NL MVP here next on Mean Streets. Let's take a look at the NL MVP odds via DraftKings. Juan Soto up at the top at plus 550. And Gildan's like, yeah, you like the Padres. Blake Snell, NL Cy Young. We'll talk Cy Young tomorrow. Snell did have a really good second half last year. Juan Soto, I'm not buying this. He was a disappointment last year. I wasn't super impressed with him in San Diego. I do believe he's really good. I think he's a great player. There's no question. I'm not doubting his skill. I don't know how healthy he is at the moment. This Padres lineup, it's stacked, right? Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to be back in 20 games. You got Manny Machado, who was really great last season. Also saw on DraftKings, Manny Machado versus Byron Buxton home runs. Like, that's what I'm talking about. There's certainly some edges. I think Manny Machado will have more homers than Byron Buxton. You also got, Xander Bogaerts brought in. I like the rotation. Bullpen's good. So I'm not really buying the plus 550. I do like Turner at 8-1. I think Turner, this is not about the World Baseball Classic, although he was hot fire in the World Baseball Classic. He's a guy that is going to steal bags, and it's going to be easier for guys to steal bags this year. Moving from Dodger Stadium to Citizens Bank is a win for him. It's a good ballpark for him. He's going to lead off for the Phillies. I like this Phillies lineup. It's too bad Rhys Hoskins is done for the season. Bryce Harper is going to miss some time, maybe 2 months. He wasn't placed on the 60-day DL, so maybe he's going to be back sooner rather than later, but it's still definitely May. If Turner can carry the load here for the first couple months of the season, Kyle Schwarber behind him hitting bombs, JT Realmuto. How about JT Realmuto getting tossed yesterday in that game? This is ludicrous. This is jokes. If you haven't seen it, just Google JT Realmuto or type him into Twitter. But Turner is set up to have some success. You know, the average is going to be good. He could score 100 runs in that lineup. Even with Rhys Hoskins out, I still think this is going to be one of the better lineups in baseball. So he can flirt with 100 runs. Maybe he can hit you 20-25, and he can certainly steal 20-25 bags as well. I think, if he can hold the fort down, as I mentioned, before Bryce gets back in the lineup, I really do like that call. But it's Ronald Acuña Jr. for me. I'm a sucker for this guy. He seems healthy. You know, most projections have him to steal 40 plus bags. I don't know if he gets there, but we have him in the bet tracker at over 26 home runs, 26 and a half. That climbed up to, I think, 32 and a half in some books. I think he's got 40 home run potential. I love this Braves lineup. I understand that, you know, you can make the same case saying, you know, don't pick Soto because all these studs. You can say the same case, same thing here for the Braves. And there's a couple players here on this list. Austin Riley's on this list. Michael Harris II is on this list. They got a good pitching staff. They got some decent arms in the bullpen, despite Raisel Iglesias dealing with something at the moment. I just think Ronald Acuña Jr. is a five-tool player. I just think he's an absolute stud at plus 850. I certainly like that call. And then a little bit later on down the list, you know, Pete Alonso at 15-1. I think Austin Riley's a guy that, you know, could hit 40 bombs, cash in 100 RBIs. He's one for sure as well. Fernando Tatis Jr. for MVP. I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, has he rubbed voters the wrong way from last year's suspension carried over to this season? Don't get me wrong. The guy is an absolute stud. You know, if I am going to pick a Padre, it would be him, but I think Ronald Acuña Jr. I think is a safer bet at plus 850. And then there's really nothing I like on the right side. I think Jazz Chisholm is interesting at 40-1, but I don't think the Marlins are going to be a playoff squad, and he's had some issues staying healthy as well. And then Harper's going to miss 2 months of the season, so I just don't think you get involved with Harper. You know, that number is going to be a lot longer when he does return. Schwarber is an interesting candidate, but I actually like Kyle Schwarber to lead the NL in home runs. That would be my pick for Kyle Schwarber. I think he's got 40, 45 home run potential. And he's got bombs, and he hits bombs in big spots, doesn't he? What an absolute stud. Ronald Acuña Jr., MVP, NL MVP. Quick break, NHL picks and props, 10 games on the ice. I got some shot props. I got some point props. We're going to get nuts here on Mean Streets. Back in a couple. Back in 10 games on the ice tonight in the NHL. Dango Batselli already recorded here on our FTN Network YouTube page. You can also catch it at Game Plus Network. We ran through all 10 games, called some goal scores, some sides, some totals. I'll start actually with sides. I don't have a board for sides, but I like the Bruins on the puck line. I think that's at minus 122 to win by two. I like the Kings. I mean, you guys watched yesterday's show. I'm a sucker for this Los Angeles Kings team. We got a future on them at 45-1. I still think that they're a pretty good bet right now. And just over the last, since February 1st, they've allowed the fewest shots on goal at 5-5 per 60, the third fewest goals, the second lowest expected goal rate, third fewest high danger chances, third fewest scoring chances, and the third fewest shots overall. They play a weird trap style. It's kind of like an old left wing lock. It's like the old Devils or the old the Lightning that played that way. They just have three guys basically in the neutral zone. They clog up absolutely everything. They don't allow a lot of speed, and they just play really good hockey. I mean, they got two great defensive forwards in Andrei Kopitar and Philip Deneau. Victor Arvidsson, more on him in a second, has been fantastic as well. He's got a lot to offer. Three lines that can come at you in waves. I like the addition of Kevin Fiala. They lost in seven to the Oilers last year. They may get the Oilers again. It's not going to be an easy matchup. They don't have great goaltending, but guess what? The Oilers don't have great goaltending either. There's a lot of teams in the Western Conference that don't have great goaltending. So I think it is wide open despite a potential tough first-round matchup with the Golden Knights or with the Edmonton Oilers. But I like the Kings on the road at plus 115. They're hot right now, hot fire. Top five team in the league over the last 2 months, and they just beat up on the Flames a few days ago. I like the Jets to win in 60 at minus 120 against the San Jose Sharks. And those are the three sides that I'm really feeling. Let's go over to shot props first before we got some point props here. Michael Matheson, this guy's just been automatic. I think the odds are slightly changing now. This is from Bet Rivers this morning. I believe I see minus 125 now, but he has been just so darn good. At least three shots in four straight games. And in three of those games, he's had five shots. He played 29 minutes last night. He played 28 minutes the other night against the Bruins. I'm extremely impressed with Michael Matheson. I think that was a really good trade by the Habs to get younger, ship off Jeff Petrie. Got 4 or 5 years younger with Matheson. What a terrific skater. As I said on Dangle Batselli, I don't want to put him in the group with Shea Theodore or Cale Makar, because those guys, especially Makar, those guys are just freaks. But Matheson is such a good skater. He goes up and down the ice with ease. He loves to join the rush. He's got a spinorama there. He likes to put pucks on net, and he has cleared 2.5 shots in 6 of his last 7 games. A power player too usually does it. He'll get there alone on that, but the shot attempts have been through the roof for him over the last month. In fact, he's been a top 5 fantasy hockey defenseman, a league winner for people here down the stretch. Victor Arvidsson, surprisingly 2.5 over at Bet Rivers and Unibet. Some books have him at 3.5 plus money. I would take the over 3.5 plus money as well. He's actually cleared 2.5 in 11 straight games. This is a tougher spot against Calgary, but nobody's hotter than him at the moment. 2 goals the other night and 8 shots on net. He just loves to shoot the puck, so I'm going to ride this out with him. Groupe Hintz hasn't been fantastic lately, but this is a good spot against the Chicago Blackhawks. I like Groupe Hintz to score a goal as well, and he is interesting at plus 160 for an apple tonight because I do believe Robertson's going to have a night. More on him in a minute. Brock Besser's been pretty good. We got lucky the other night, an empty net goal to get 3 shots, but Brock Besser has had at least 3 shots in 6 straight games. He's feeling it at the moment next to setup man JT Miller. And then Jason Zucker. Jason Zucker is actually inside the top 10 in scoring at 5.5 per 60 over the last 2 months. Believe it or not, the goals haven't been there over the past few games, but the shots certainly have. He has cleared in 3 straight. He has 14 over that span, and he has cleared in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of his last 9 games in a good spot against the Red Wings to make it 9 of 10 for Jason Zucker. And then over to some point props here. Getting a little nuts. Jason Robertson over 1.5 points at plus 175. He's got 2 multi-point games over his last 4. He had a 3-point night the other night. Artemi Panarin has 3 multi-point games over his last 5. The worst team in the league. It's not even close. Although the Ducks are probably right there as well. But the Blue Jackets are atrocious. Yeah, they got some nice players on offense, but they give up a whole lot. I mean, the Canadians put it up 8 spots. On them over the weekend. What do you think the Rangers could do with all of this offense? Artemi Panarin plus 175 for 2 points. Kuzmenko, I just don't understand it. It's just like, I feel like a broken record here. Anytime I see it, minus 130, I just don't get it. Points in 3 straight, 5 points over that span. He has hit the score sheet in 8 of his last 11 games. As long as he's linked to Elias Pettersson at minus 130 against the leaky St. Louis Blues, I am in. Tarasenko just kind of hated on the Blue Jackets there for a little bit. Tarasenko up on that top line. I think Mika Zibanejad scores. I think Chris Kreider picks up an assist at plus 165. And I think Tarasenko gets on the score sheet as well at minus 128. And again, Victor Arvidsson, like, how could you not roll with this guy at minus 116 for a point? I believe that is over at FanDuel. He's got points in 3 straight games and 7 over that span. He's just been, look at the shots for Arvidsson. 8-3-3-4-4-4-4-8-7-4-5. And as I mentioned, he's got 5 goals in his last 3 games, 6 over his last 5. A lot of action on the ice in the NHL. Good luck. I have a few more point props and shot props in the bet tracker. Also have a free article coming your way over to ftnbets.com. Good luck on the ice. Talk to you tomorrow. Cheers.